Hi, you guys. Thanks for coming over. This is Richard Sachs. I'm actually still alive in the physical body. You can't tell from the picture, but I actually look like that. And I'm just moving around. So I'm not standing in front of the camera, but I wanted to let you know I'm still here and appreciate your presence very much. I've been dealing with something that's trying to take me out. No one knows what it is that I'm aware of, but we're working on it. And in the meantime, I'm just really honored to be here with you. Things are so unstable in the world right now. Every day is precious. And Dr. Cousins is here, fortunately, and has some important stuff to share with us regarding what's going on in the world right now and our response to it. So welcome, Dr. Cousins.
Okay, Richard, I'm very happy to have you here with us. And your presence here, it's good. It's a good thing. So thank you for...
I hope you don't mind the photograph instead of the moving around.
Well, that's a good photograph. I think that that's good. You look really good.
Pretty realistic.
Okay. So what I think what we need in today's world is a little bit of joy. And so when we dance, we create spiritual joy. So we're going to dance. I'm going to encourage you to all to dance with me for a few minutes, and then we will go into a minute or so of meditation, and then I'll be talking about a topic that's kind of a hot topic. It's about the Middle East and Hamas and Israel. I kind of have a unique perception being almost like a reporter on the ground, because I get so many different inputs for so many different people, and I think it's time I try to, I have enough data that I can actually say things with a lot of backing. You know, we're not writing a PhD thesis, but what I say is backed by a lot of information. So let's start with a little dancing. Okay, ready. Let's all dance.
Thank you.
Now, focus on my eyes for a second, and then we're going to go into meditation. Here we go. Okay, just a minute of meditation. Okay, welcome everybody. So we're going to start with a prayer, merging the heart and the mind. Here we go. Nishimakud Kudashabri Hu Shinite Bi U or Imu Vayad Shinyuki Bavavke Bi Udar Shum Shim Kosreo Kolam Amen. So I'm going to touch on a potentially touchy subject here, okay? And that's what's going on with Hamas and Israel, and really, really in the whole world. In the whole world, we have over 110 military conflicts. 110. Okay, you know, we have Ukraine, and we have Russia, and, you know, and France may send 2,000 soldiers. U.S. already has some soldiers on the ground. It's like, it's pretty wild. But in a smaller context, except if you're living in Israel or in the Middle East, we have the Hamas, Iran war versus Israel. Why do I mention Iran? Because Iran is behind the whole thing. That's the key concept. Okay. And the question is what to do? What does this mean? And there's an interesting way to think about it, but there's no law of nature which makes peace the norm. Nature isn't so kind. Humans have a history of continually creating war and difficulty. So we have some ideas, you know, people have been at war for a long time, thousands of years. It's not exactly a new thing, war. And in the Holocaust, Pope Pius XII chose to be, in essence, a passive bystander to the Holocaust. He made a slight stand to rescue people individually, but really he didn't confront the Nazis. Okay. And so what we see that all the way back, and that was not new. Okay. The present Pope, same thing. You know, he's not exactly supporting Israel, but he's not supporting Israel. He's now criticizing Iran for financing war. But at the same time, he's still denying Israel the moral right to fight a just war. Now, just war, is there any such thing as just war? Well, St. Augustine, thousands of years ago, said something interesting. A just war, as he interpreted it, was one that was fought in self-defense and without a focus on civilians. Okay, so we can see how that criteria works. So the ultimate purpose of a just war in his concept is to save lives and protect the innocent. Now, that's a really kind of pretty interesting thing. So let's take a look at how that applies to Hamas and Israel. Okay. So there are innumerable wars since 1948 that have been fought that have been decidedly to destroy Israel. A day after Israel was founded, even though it got the okay from the different charters and things, and really back to 1917, you know, putting aside there should be land for Israel and for Jews to go, particularly after the Holocaust, there was more movement in that direction. Now, let's look at the question of, is it in self-defense? Well, I think we can say after so many wars where Hamas, or whether it's not Qatar, is not saying it publicly, but Iran is to destroy Israel. That's clearly what they're saying. We want to kill all the Jews, not just in Israel, but in the whole world. That's been a consistent thing. If you look at the Hamas constitution, or however the right term is, that's what they say. And their goal is not, but people would be really not getting it if they understand it doesn't stop them. It's about all the infidels. That includes the Christians. That includes the non-Muslims, starting with the Jews. So that's the thing to understand. This is a much bigger battle than we think it is. And so the battle has that meaning on multiple levels. Now, the Middle East is different. And again, I'm kind of an observer here. It's different in the sense that there's great respect for the bully. Now, that's a kind of a funny way to put it. But if you don't fight back and you let yourself be pushed around, that encourages more aggression against you. So part of in the Middle East is that people have to stay strong if they don't want to have continual wars. Now, we looked at Gaza. Now, Gaza required about 10,000 people being displaced, farmers and kibbutzes there, and about 2005. It was a land for peace deal. And by 2007, 2008, we already began to have war and kind of troubles in different ways. And that's going on. Now, I'm not going to burden you with an overwhelming history, but I want to make a point that land for peace, that sounds really reasonable. But what happened? Well, you got hundreds of miles of underground tunnels. You have a complete design to destroy Israel and kill all the Jews. You know, and they even, and they knew about all this, okay? That's what's a little perplexing to me. I don't know what the bigger plan to the bigger plan is. But there were, you know, model camps that were set up to look like some of the kibbutzes where people were living on the border there. And you have not just Hamas, but you have the Houthis, you have Hezbollah, and Iran backing them. And the game plan, and I don't know exactly why it didn't happen, was to attack from four directions. We're talking Hezbollah and the kind of bank area, and as well as Hamas. And I don't want to get too much into, but we do need to understand, like, this battle isn't just about Israel. In the sub-Sahara, the Muslims have done over 1,800 terror attacks, killing many, many Christians. There weren't Jews there, they're Christians. And in Nigeria, where I work with about five different African countries, in the southern Nigeria, where we had some of our programs, the man I worked with who more recently became the king was a colonel in the army fighting against the Muslims, as he represents more Christian part in Nigeria. So this is not a new thing, this jihad against anyone who isn't a Muslim. Okay, so Shia is a religious war. We can also see that there are all kinds of undertones. For example, Doug, who does all the work behind the stage here for us, asked me about the red heifers. Well, they have three red heifers that came from Texas, and they're pure, and one of them has to be sacrificed, and the ashes have to be used as part of the building of the third temple. So that's a big issue. And actually, Hamas people have talked about that. So we have the spiritual level of the war. We have the anti-Semitic, anti-Christian level of the war for the whole world. So that's a piece of it. Now, people have made, and this is called the blood libel. We've heard about that in Europe. The blood libel is the Jews are pointing wells and, you know, justifying all these things. Anti-Semitism, and what we're looking at is Israel has the lowest ratio of civilians versus fighters killed. It's 1-to-1 or 1.5-to-1. U.S. ranging to peddler woods in Afghanistan or Iraq was somewhere between 3 to 8 to 1. It's very difficult to really estimate what goes on. But I'm mentioning that because one of the teachers from West Point was making a point is that they couldn't possibly get the statistics they're saying, the 30,000. It's not possible. To come up with accurate statistics. Israel claims they've killed 13,000 soldiers. Now, they're not playing by the rules of war. Okay, countries at war still have rules of war. What? You don't hide out in hospitals, schools, or churches, or temples. You can't do that. And, of course, that's not what Hamas is doing. And to make a point, that Hamas has more, has 36 hospitals for 2 million people, and most Arab countries with 3 million people, not 2 million people, have less hospitals. So how come? It's because the hospitals are being used as places where people develop communication centers. You know, they just recently found this one hospital had, there were tunnels under it, as they are with most of the hospitals, and their communication centers and safe spaces and places where arms storage is. Now, soldiers coming back, Israeli soldiers coming back, they said, it's hard to believe. Every house has arms stored. So the second thing is the Hamas soldiers wear civilian clothes. In other words, they're using the civilians as shield. Makes it really difficult. Now, Israel, as noted really by the U.S. Army generals who have been here, has the best record for minimizing civilian deaths. Now, what that means is more Israeli soldiers get killed. But that 1-to-1 or 1.5-to-1 is way better than the U.S. has done, and certainly better than anywhere else in the Middle East by far. They notify people, they drop pamphlets, they create safe spaces. They may be going into and they're creating spaces where civilians can evacuate. But they're not going to lose the war. I mean, we hear the word. Also, free water and electricity from Israel. You know, people say that's a prison. Well, not really. When you look at it, you're looking at it's got Egypt on one side, it's got the Mediterranean on the other side, and two sides is Israel, giving them free water and electricity, and basically since 2005, their own rule. There are no Jews in there. That's part of it. You know, Jew-free, okay? And they weren't controlling the government, and that's probably how Hamas came in. They were, it's your land. You can use it. There's a lot of resistance about it. People weren't happy about being displaced. But that was the original land of Mary Steele and the original two-state solution, because basically Gaza was its own state, became its own state. Now, the two-state solution really has never worked. And that's obviously a problem in there, you know, because it's not a viable solution. We already see that that would even make it worse for people. Over 100,000 people, northern Israel, have been displaced because they're shooting down at them. They haven't kept, Hezbollah hasn't kept the agreement to move back beyond the Jordan River. And all this keeps going on and on. Nothing is being honored, okay? And at the same time, the Gazans have a higher standard of living than most Arab people in the area, including in Iran. So there's a lot of disparity. You know, they get about $230 million per month in financing. As it doesn't qualify as a state, but that's beside the point, because it has no economy. Its economy is building tunnels and arms. That's its economy. Now, we hear about starving. Well, there's more trucks, this is data that we can't be disputed here, going into Gaza than there were before the war. Now, how it's distributed is a big deal, because people are fighting over the food, and mostly Hamas is taking the food. But you go to the marketplace, you can get food, but you pay for it. Okay, because it's being stolen and using to finance. But they still have a higher standard of living. The $230 million per month is a lot. Now, it's not exactly going to the people. The top three to five Hamas leaders are worth about $11 billion. I said $11 billion, I didn't say $11 million. Their assets. So the top five leaders are billionaires in this whole piece. So there's a lot of going on. So we're looking at a difficult situation, but the myths that I addressed is they have the lowest rate of civilian fatality for anyone, made more complicated by they're not following the rules of law, war, which is hiding out in educational centers and in mosques and in hospitals. And they're not supposed to do that. That's against the rules of war. The people can't complain if you're getting shot at from a hospital that you go in and deal with that hospital who's inside the hospital. So in a way, if there isn't a just war, this war isn't just, there's never been a just war. Now, what are Israelis thinking? They're seeing this as existential. They're seeing if Hamas wins the war, which if Hamas isn't defeated militarily, that's the end of Israel. Now, I say pretty stark, but that is what we're talking about. That's where it goes, because people in Judea and Samaria, Muslims in Judea and Samaria, and in Gaza, are around 82%, roughly speaking, in favor of what happened and are very much in favor of it happening again. They've made it clear that we're going to, if we can do it, we're going to have more than one October 7th. So that forced situation, it's like, okay, you have made it clear, you want to kill all the Jews, and you certainly did. You raped, you pillaged, you cut off babies' heads in front of their parents. Oh, we don't really believe that really happened. Well, but they were showing videos of that happening. Hamas people were showing videos. It did happen. Okay, I've talked to people. It did happen. So there's some denial, particularly in the West. It's so barbaric. How could this happen? But the fact is, Hamas fighters were pretty proud of what they did, and they had their body cam video showing it, and was apparently was on TV. I've seen a variety of civilians being interviewed who, men and women, both are totally in favor of what happened, you know, and would like to see it happen again. So we have that kind of situation where people are saying, in Israel, it's like, well, I think we should believe them. I think we should believe them. They actually want to kill us. And that's how people feel here. And is it paranoid? Not exactly. It just happened, and they keep saying that's what they're going to do if they get a chance. So I would say that there isn't a person I've talked to in Israel who doesn't agree that this war has to be completed, Hamas has to be defeated entirely, and they have to set up a civilian infrastructure that doesn't allow Hamas to take control again and create another destruction like they did, you know, rape, pillage. And that's what's happening. Even UNRU, it's very clear that many, many members of UNRU were working, they were Hamas, but they also took part in the atrocities. And that's now starting to come out. So it's a very difficult situation, but it's also very simple. And the simple is they need to finish in Ramah, you know, Rafah. And again, that is the, you know, 90% of the people, 95% of the people, a lot of leftists who were against all this suddenly have changed their mind about it. So this is the kind of the report that you're getting, is that Israel sees this as an existential threat to the state of Israel because they're believing what Hamas has said and what it's done. And not just Hamas, Muslims in Judea Samaria, Iran has said this for a while and has also included the U.S. in that discussion. So we're trying to, you know, there's a big picture, but I'm just talking about the small picture of Hamas in Israel and Qatar, and, you know, Iran, who stands behind it all. It's very unclear what the U.S. is doing based on their position kind of changing, but it's clear in Israel that people feel the U.S. is against him. It's not what is Israel win the war. That's pretty much it. And so that's kind of where we are at the moment. I believe that what we're going to see, even though Hamas attacked Israel on Shabbat and the Arabs attacked on Yom Kippur in 1973, the holiest day of the year, that, you know, everybody's making a big deal about Ramadan, with the Ramadan, and most likely Israel will not attack them during the month of Ramadan, which kind of ends in a week. So, you know, they're trying to hold that kind of line. But the vast majority of people feel Hamas has to be militarily defeated. And then you get talked about some kind of peace settlement. Richard, so there we are. It's not the best situation. Prophecy talks about all these things happening. The word Hamas at the time of Noah means chaos and destruction. So that's what we're saying. So, Richard, go ahead.
Well, I don't know where to start, Gabriel. This is the deep subject, and it's really important. It's a good one that you picked. I'm coming from way outside the box, and I don't believe that religion has been a good thing for the world at all. I think most of the major religions believe that they're the only ones that are actually fully human. Everybody else is subhuman and needs to be killed, and that God is on their side and wants the other side killed. And
well, that's certainly the Muslim position.
In contrast to that, I have some vague memory of where we came from, and it wasn't a handful of dust. And this puts me at odds with most of what we've been taught. But I honor the memory of unlimited love and everybody being an integral part of the original spirit, which was the only player that did everything. Because in the beginning, even if there was never a book written, I have the memory that there was only spirit, there was only God, and it wasn't defined in words, it wasn't made up by a group of people, it wasn't to justify anything against anybody. There was no time, there was no space, there was no creation. There was just spirit. And because of that, everything that was existing in this dream that was projected by that spirit had to be made of the same thing, because there were no Home Depots to go get material to make creation. It all had to come from spirit. And if you dig, I spent a long time, and I'm sorry if my voice is a bit shaky. I'm still not 100%.
No, you're good. You're good. You're coming across clear.
The point is that I spent many decades investigating the global power structure and the people running it. And, you know, you made a comment in the beginning of your presentation that nature didn't have anything about love and harmony. And it's true. Nature on the 3D plane, which is a very low level of frequency and existence compared to where we came from, all of us, is very nasty. The way it's set up here is highly corrupt. You've got, this is the system that's operating here. We've got creatures tearing each other apart and eating each other's bodies to survive. I mean, it can't get much more severe than that. And the emotional distress is equivalent. It's very nasty here. But what I found that really amazed me is that even with the bad, so-called bad people, the worst characters, were actually above all the religions and nationalities. They're satanic, in my experience, and very dark. And there's a power structure that's run at the top by a very small number of people that are globally identified and trying to please their master, which is not physical. And I went above that, and in meditation encountered some of the astral level bosses of the highest physical people and very dark entities. And I dug into their essence. And what I found, and this seems, I know this sounds really strange, but I failed to find anything that could be called intrinsic evil. What I found is that there's nothing at the base but spirit, but it's filtered through mind programs, some of which are so dark. And they split up into a duality of light and darkness, so that some characters are really wonderful, you know, brilliant, peaceful, what we would call good guys, men and women and everybody. And some are playing the roles of very, very bad guys, worse than most people could imagine. And yet, who's playing the parts of those characters? It's all one actor. And so when I was considering coming into this particular birth, which I remember before coming in here, I thought, this is a mess. This whole system is a mess. It's not that it has to be tweaked a little bit. It needs to be brought back into complete harmony, similar to what somebody named Dr. Cousins is talking about in the World Peace Meditation Approach to Everything. And I thought, well, all we have to do is bring our consciousness with us and start a wave of awakening. And we can make this dream, which is what it is, a good dream instead of a nightmare. And basically what may be called heaven on earth. And there's no reason we can't do that. And that's who we are. And the only thing that many of us didn't think of, which is a critical oversight, is in my experience, and I think everybody else's that I know of, in the process of getting connected to a nervous system when the human body is being woven into physical form during the 9 months of gestation, there's a disconnection process that happens where you lose contact and access to your normal abilities. And I thought when we came here, we would have our normal abilities fully functional. And in a few minutes, we would start a wave of light and it would harmonize this mess. And everybody would enjoy an artistic expression of love, which was the reason that we dreamed this place into existence in the first place, not to fight light against dark and kill each other. And that disconnection has been the problem. And on my side, to kind of complement what you're doing, I started Planetary Healing Club. And the reason for that was that we were going to use consciousness tools, similar to what you talk about, but reconnecting to our original abilities and start that wave of light. And I feel like, you know, it's been something that needed to be accomplished, and I haven't been able to do it. And now I'm fighting against something that is trying to take me out physically. And if we get reconnected to our original abilities, which are normal, they're not anything extraordinary from the real point of view, then our physical bodies will reflect that. And I'm sure that this illusion of age, degeneration, will be gone and will be luminous in our own dream. And that's the reality that I see. So when I look at these governments, the U.S. and the Israel government and virtually every other government in the world, probably the least corrupt right now is Russia, and they're pretty corrupt too. I see them all as a disgrace to our real state and trying to solve something, making believe they can solve it from here without that universal consciousness. And I don't think that's possible. I think where they're leading us is into more and more hell on earth. And I'm not in favor of hell on earth because it doesn't feel good. You know, I think we have an option, and it's way above any good actions that our governments could even think of doing. And they're all so corrupt now, they don't think of doing much that's really, truly good. But I don't blame or condemn any of them, because when you come into this realm, it's so distracting when when you're tied into the nervous system of a physical form, and more so into the mind programs that lead you through pleasure and pain into an identity that you think is going to work, either evil or good. And the basic problem is overlooked, which is disconnection from our original self. And if we get that back, we see beauty and harmony return here. If we don't get that back, we'll wonder what we missed as the whole thing descends into hell. And that's what I see our choice is.
Well, thank you. Your vision is beautiful, and I happen to share it, okay?
You don't think I'm totally insane? That's great.
I really agree. And the question that comes up, it's not really a question, is you alluded to the duality, people playing roles of dark and light, okay?
Yeah.
And my interpretation of that is that's how we grow spiritually, because we have to face that and overcome the duality, bringing it back to one. So we go from one, which you talked about before, to two, and now back to one. And I think that's where we're going. But what we're seeing in the world with 110 different military conflicts with Hamas and Israel and Qatar and you know, Iran and Russia and all the different things going on, is we're still in the world of duality. And this is why we do the peace meditation of the next step, because the hell on earth is already here, is to how do we bring it back to oneness? Okay. And sometimes the medicine, just like you, if you overeat and you get sick, you kind of get the idea you shouldn't overeat. Okay.
Yeah.
And we're creating one cell on earth to get to people, get people to a point to overcome it and say, wait a second, you know, let's go back to the oneness consciousness from which we came.
Yes.
And let go of duality. So that's the key. And I was explaining some of the duality, because if we're stuck with all the resentments and the blood libels and things like that, we can't even move off that. And we come now to the oneness, which is where I believe all this is going to take us.
Yeah, I think so too. I just don't agree that we had to go through this, because, I mean, it's kind of a moot point because we did and we are.
But, right, it's a moot point. You're right. It's like, do we have to? No.
Well, there is an important issue, and that is that we didn't start from nothing. We started from all consciousness. If you think we started from nothing, we need incredible amounts of pain to learn anything. If you think we started from oneness and all consciousness, all we have to do is remember and reconnect.
Well, that's what I meant when I was talking nothing. Nothing is, I have a book called Into the Nothing, which is where you go beyond all your identities and you feel one with all of cosmic creation.
Right, and you rise above the numbers thing, no matter what, you know.
Right, because there's no you. There's no you there. You disappear in. You're part of the cosmic oneness.
And that is the you. And then when you look at one child who lost a limb or something, we had some viral videos of that going around. Whether it's a Jewish child or a Muslim child or a Christian child or anything, that's too much. And it's intolerable, because that's us suffering now. And so we have to just stop the whole thing. And the only way to do that is not argument. It's got to be somebody has to reach this level of reconnection, and then it spreads.
So what I would say is it's got to be a lot of somebodies. That's why we have the World Peace Meditation, to create that oneness, to upgrade the frequency piece. We know that works. Okay, and maybe we can put that up there. Thank you. World Peace Meditation every Sunday at 6:30 Israel time. It does work. It does change consciousness when people meditate together. We know that happens. So right. It's really, really important to get that. Now, what I wanted to say by that is that this, just like any healing crisis, you know, it'd be nice if we didn't have healing crisis. It'd be nice if people didn't overeat. It'd be nice if people ate the healthy foods. All these things are true, but they don't. But that pain they go through by their choice can bring people to higher awareness if we see it that way rather than seeing it in duality. Yeah. That's basically what I'm saying. And so even when we look at this situation in the Middle East, but again, around the world, Ukraine and Russia, that it goes on and on, is that our task as human beings, by seeing such a mess that's being made, is to be inspired by that to bring it into oneness.
Right.
And to me, that's the task. Now, it'd be nice if we didn't have to do that. Well, it'd be nice if we just got it. But
we didn't really. The only reason we had to is we got disconnected.
Yeah, but that's part of the task. The spiritual task is, we're not totally disconnected, but we're disconnected. And the spiritual growth is becoming connected and seeing the oneness. One becomes two becomes one. It's a simple formula. And that's where we go. But this is bitter medicine. We didn't get the sweet tasting medicine. We didn't get it. So we're getting the hard, bitter medicine. And hopefully we'll get it after that. The Essenes predicted 2,000 years ago that about a year from now, we would begin moving towards the 1,000 years of peace.
And I'm saying no more cycles. It has to be reconnection and stabilize it. You know, if we have 1,000 years of peace and then more hell, that's not acceptable.
Well, I'll settle right now for 1,000 years of peace and give us time for that 1,000 years of peace where we can make it infinite years of peace. I would like to see that.
Yeah, it's a step. It's a step. And, and like you said, the proof that it works is what I call clues. That even if they're done on a small scale and partial, they do prove that consciousness reconnecting to harmony to some degree pulls the so-called physical reality into line with it. And the reality, what we understand is the physical reality is not solid. It's a projection. It's like a high-tech movie. And that's so hard for people to grasp intellectually. But that's been seen and proven. But, you know, quantum physics is just on the edge of that, and you can go much further. And the whole thing is a movie, and I think that's what those clues prove in changing the crime rate and healing a tumor in seconds and things like that. It's not solid. And what we want for the so-called bad people, the really bad actors, if we want to be instruments of oneness again, we can't wish for them to suffer. We have to wish for them to be waked up. Because if our...
For sure. But if everyone's suffering the medicine. Everyone's suffering the bitter medicine. There's no good guys and bad guys.
That's
everybody
right.
Suffering this medicine. And the idea is, let's wake up from this.
Yeah, having to play the role of the bad guys is hell on earth in itself.
Right.
So those are spirits going against themselves. And the idea of loving your neighbor as yourself is because the neighbor is yourself in another form.
Right.
There was only one self to begin with.
Yeah. So that's the message. I think we're sharing the same message here. You know, I gave some of the details, but the ultimate thing is one becomes two becomes one. Pretty simple message. And that's our work. And what we need to see this is bitter medicine that can help us wake up. And that perspective sets it as a spiritual challenge for the whole human civilization to grow spiritually rather than pick sides.
Yeah, pick the one side.
Right. Right. So good. I'm so glad that you're joining us. You really added a lot, so thank you.
Well, it's your encouragement in large part that's made it possible. I was not going to come this morning, and I in fact sent a message to Doug saying, please apologize to Gabriel for me. I really want to be back with you guys. And then after that, I did that. That Richard, you wimp, stand up. You know, do this. You're talking about who you are. You might want to consider actually doing what you're telling people to do.
Very good. Very good. So I want to thank you, Richard. I want to thank you, Doug, behind the scenes. And I bless everyone for participating with this and really hold the model. May you be blessed with the model of becoming one again with all of consciousness. Amen. Aho. Om Takyasin. Shalom, shalom, shalom. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Beautiful, Gabriel. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys. And thanks for forgiving me to just be a two-dimensional picture at the moment. It's the best I could do for the immediate present and hopefully better in the future. I want to echo what Gabriel is saying and what he's teaching and what he's doing at treeoflife.mn.co, if I remember that correctly.
That's correct. That's correct.
And drcousins.com in addition. And
also World Peace Meditation.
WorldPeaceMeditation.net, I think it was. And And that's happening every Sunday. And there's the times that Doug's just put on the roof. That's more than a little, you know, symbolic ritual. It's a taste of what we're supposed to be carrying with us all the time, because I think it was St. Augustine that was enjoining people to pray without ceasing, and other Christian saints and Jewish saints as well. And the point is that you're praying all the time now. You're meditating all the time now, but on what? You know, you're reciting a mantra. What is it? Oh, I forgot to feed the dog. What if my bill doesn't get paid on time? What if this person doesn't like me? Those are prayers, meditations, mantras. And what I'm saying is that Dr. Cousins' message is make your prayer conscious. You know, you're already praying all the time, but do it in a way that you want to radiate out to the world. And for myself, I know that what the memory is of the oneness that Gabriel's talking about is real, much more real than what we think the reality is. And this physical world is actually a projection from the original oneness that he talked about. But that being true, we have to actually manifest that on the physical world. I think that's the point. That's our best opportunity of being here. And Doug just put up planetaryhealingclub.com. I haven't been promoting that because I didn't know if I'd be there next week. You know, I've literally been fighting for my life for almost 3 years. And my individual appointments, that consulting work, has been blocked for about 3 years. And I didn't want to invite people to join the club without knowing whether I was going to make it. But at this point, you know, things are so unstable in the world, none of us knows whether we're going to be here tonight or tomorrow. And so all we know is we're here now. If you want to join us, in addition to looking into Dr. Cousins' programs and helping him, you can join planetaryhealingclub.com. Be honored to have you there. And no guarantees of anything, because that's the reality on this point. We're doing the best we can in the immediate present. And I think, like Dr. Cousins also said, the message in a way is simple. Unconditional universal love is how I see it. And if you want to talk about it, then what makes sense is to make that your living prayer, living meditation all the time. Use the world peace meditation as a template and live in it. That's all. I mean, it's not complex. And I know every week we give homework in Planetary Healing Club. And even though I couldn't be there last week, I sent out a private message to all the members and said, for this week's homework, make it a point to find somebody in your life that doesn't deserve unconditional love and give it to them and see what happens. Because you're loving yourself in reality. And I'm just advocating us to do that in all aspects of our life. So thanks for being here. I'm really appreciative that you let me come and join today, too. I hope I'll be here next time. And great thanks to Dr. Cousins and Doug Diamond, who makes everything possible. DiamondDiscAudio.com. And he also does a great news show every week on Sundays. The Diamond Report. The Diamond Dot Report, if I remember. We're all trying to do our part. Love to all of you, and thanks for being here. Share this with anybody that you think might appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you. Talk to you soon.